This episode of the Rusty Satellite Show is sponsored by George Barrett, Simonton Realtors. George Barrett is a native Louisvillian with his finger on the pulse of Louisville real estate. Whether you're buying, selling, or investing, call George Barrett with Simonton Realtors to start your journey. Find him online at KentuckyTeamRealtors.com.
Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Robbing and shooting and raping and killing, bloody murder, molesting, running airplanes into buildings. Every time I turn around, something else is going wrong. Yeah, tell me, what the hell is going on?
Welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. The show airs every week exclusively here on the Louisville.am podcast network. Rick's ready to start ranting and raving about his hometown right now. So here's Rick.
And this is Rick Redding of the Rusty Satellite Show. Welcome in. It's the first show in November. We're having a lot of milestones, a lot of great sound. This is stuff going on. This is the show I've dubbed the show about the most interesting people in the Ville. T-shirts on the way, maybe. We'll see. I am looking into doing some stuff like that for the show. It's been a lot of fun. If you get a chance to go on RustySatelliteShow.com, I've got a video up there that sort of encapsulates. It's sort of a slideshow of the first 38 guests that I've had on the show. It's really, I guess, kind of interesting. I'm kind of learning how to do video, and this was a fun one to do. It's a little rough on the edges. It's not ready for any awards, but it is an interesting perspective of this little experiment called the Rusty Satellite Show. We're 19 shows in. This is the 20th show. So if you want to look back and see some of the most interesting people in the Ville all in one place, take a look at that video. And we've got a couple more really interesting folks on the show today. First, I want to thank it is sort of a milestone. This is the first show with our new sponsor, Passport Health Plan. Really want to thank the folks at Passport for stepping up and becoming a sponsor of the Rusty Satellite Show. It really makes a big difference in terms of everything that's going on here with the show. So thanks again to our friends at Passport. Now, my first guest today is a good friend of mine, Steve Coombs. I used to work with Steve a long time ago. Well, you might not think it's a long time ago. It was 2003, 2002 at a place called NetWorld Alliance. Steve was editor at a publication called Pizza Today, and you know, we knew about each other. I called him up. We basically hired him away to start a new site called Pizza Marketplace, and Steve and I had a great time working together for a couple of years and remained friends for a long time. And Steve is really somebody I admire. He's carved out a nice living as a freelance writer specializing in food. And he knows everything there is to know. He knows more than anybody else in this town, I would say, about the restaurant industry. He knows the chefs, the owners. He knows what it's like to go through as a waiter, as a server. He just knows a lot about the restaurant industry, and he's parlayed that into a career as a writer, and now he's expanding into, he's got a book project we talk about, and he is also, making me really jealous, he's starting to write about spirits.
What is Louisville if it's not a food town? Learn where to go and what to eat on Deliciously Louisville with Ashley Eats every other Wednesday on Louisville.am.
No matter how young and healthy you are, life can be full of unpleasant surprises. And without health insurance, even a short hospital stay could set you back thousands of dollars. If you qualify for expanded Medicaid, you can get coverage through Passport Health Plan. Find out if you qualify. Call 855-459-6328 or go online at kynect.ky.gov. Choose Passport, the plan that takes the time to care.
And here we are in November, the first show in November with Steve Coombs, a longtime friend of mine who's a best known in this market as a food critic. Steve knows, I believe, every chef in town, every restaurant in town. If you want to know what's new, in the restaurant scene. Steve's the guy to talk to. He writes a column that many of our listeners probably are able to read at insiderlouisville.com. And Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be here, Rick.
We're right. I understand. And of course, Steve, you grew up just miles from here in the Highlands.
Yeah, back when it was Kalen's. It's now Mulligan's, I believe.
And Mulligan's.
Went to St. Agnes right. Elementary. And if we were walking from here to there, it'd probably take us 10 minutes.
I tell you, it is a great area. And you have a really special knowledge. You know the restaurant scene, and people that I talk to, you know, kind of envy your job because you get to go out and get paid to eat a lot of times. So what are all the great benefits of being a food critic?
What are the perks? It's funny that you mentioned that. I was talking to a noted food writer in New York who's a guy that I've worked with at Nation's Restaurant News magazine, and we had a private email about how it's a little bit overrated sometimes because it's not exactly great on your health, and certainly the job of a critic, which I don't do any longer. I used to do that with Louisville Magazine many years ago. It puts you in a spot to be critical of very objective tastes and flavors and things like that. What works for me may not work for somebody else, and you don't always like being the bad guy in that thing because it's not black and white. But by and large, the personalities in the business are actually the most fun thing about it. The people to talk to, and yeah, the food is a great fringe benefit of that, as well as the drinks.
And you told me that you're getting to travel a lot recently. I guess we should tell our listeners, you don't just do Insider Louisville. Obviously, that's probably a small part of your business. You're a full-time freelance food journalist. And what other publications you write for?
Locally, Insider Louisville, like we said, Edible Louisville, and I do some work for Food and Dining Magazine as well. Nationally, I do some work for Southern Living, Nation's Restaurant News, which is the largest trade publication in the business, restaurant business, another big one. Do a lot of private client ghostwriting for some producers of stuff in the restaurant business. And, of course, I've got to keep that kind of sort of secret, but that's a good part of my business. And I'm pushing into spirits writing now, so with a particular focus on tequila. So I've got to do a fair bit of travel to Mexico lately, which has been fantastic.
Yeah, that's got to be fun. Now, people might be wondering. I know your story. You had these two loves of journalism and food, and I know that when you were younger, you worked in restaurants and sort of developed in it. I guess you can tell us that you came to a crossroads at some point having to choose, right?
I did. When I was at St. X and it was career day, Bob White, then the high school writer, you remember, for the sports page, came in and talked about deadline writing. And I wanted to be a journalist even then, but was the last class, as I understand it, at St. X to be taught on a manual typewriter. And when he spoke of deadline pressures, I thought 35 words a minute is not going to get it in that career. Yeah. And kind of shelved that dream. I went to U of L for about a semester, realized I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I was employed at the time by Casa Grisanti and Sixth Avenue, that company, Mama Grisanti, and decided I wanted to try my hand at cooking and did that for about 6 or 7 years until laptop computers came out that, I figured out, hey, you don't have to be a great typist to do this. By then, I think I put in about 11 years in the restaurant business, and at some point around year 8 decided I was going to write about it, and that's where the career has gone. I started doing that for actual money in 1991.
Well, very cool. And I know that just to let people in on, we met because you were the editor of Pizza Today, and we came up with this idea to do a pizza marketplace site at NetWorld Alliance, and you came over, and we had a couple of good years there at creating something brand new, right?
Yeah, back when the web was still fairly new, and a credit to that company for establishing really good, reliable websites. You still see some bad ones out there, and giving us an opportunity to work together and really do probably some of the harder edge journalism that I've done in my career, which is people think that's glamorous, don't they, Rick? But it's pretty hard work.
I was going to say, it's like working in sports. Everybody thinks, you get to go to the games. That's so much fun. But they don't know you got to get there 3 hours early and stay and write your story after the game. And it's real work.
Just like dining critiques. It's not nearly as fun as it sounds.
That's
it's
right.
Much more fun to go there, just enjoying the food and your company and not having to tally points one or the other.
Yeah, and what is fun, I think, you know, one of the things you do, you know, probably not as a service to the city, but just because of what you do and what you're known for, promoting this city as a restaurant town. You know, what's your explanation as to, or is it just that what we think here and that the people in Cincinnati think they're a restaurant town too, and the people in Kansas City think they're a restaurant town, or is there something really special about Louisville?
It's a little of both. I'll answer the first part of it, in that we do only understand our own context if we not travel around a whole lot. And what we experience in our own minds is the best, at least to our palate or to our wallet, whichever determines that. That's the most we can know. It's one thing to say we know New York and San Francisco and L.A. are great restaurant towns without even having been there. But then to bring it down to a realistic understanding of how good the town is when you travel to other cities that are about Louisville's size, and it's rare to see them have as many really good and diverse restaurants like we do. I mean, it's an incredible pool of restaurants that we have here for such arguably a small town. I mean, 750,000 people. That's what makes it very unique. But
and when you say good restaurants, I guess you're certainly talking about independent restaurants that are owned by people who live here or started and run by people who live here. Just give us an idea of what, you know, if somebody comes to town and, you know, from Cleveland and says, Steve, where should I go to dinner? What do you tell them?
I always ask them questions. What do you like? What's your budget? What is something that tickles your fancy about now? If they say, you know, I want an extensive wine list, I might point them toward, you know, a couple of different restaurants. If they say, I really love seafood, I'm probably pointing them towards ceviche. If they want to spend a lot of money and just have a high-end experience, I'm certainly saying Corbett's, probably saying Proof. Deca would certainly be the high-end without the dress-up. Mm-hmm. But I get a lot of people who just love the dives, and I love the dives too, or just very relaxed places. Cumberland Brews has got to be one of my favorite places in town to hang out. People ask me all the time, what's the best restaurant? Well, the best restaurant is up to you.
Yeah.
What my favorites are is a different story. And I routinely point people to Mayan Cafe. I think it's one of the most brilliant, underappreciated restaurants in this city.
And well, you were at Pizza Today and we did all this pizza, so you know a lot about pizza. I've been to your house. I know you know how to make great pizza. Where can I go to buy, you know, what are the best pizzas
in my opinion, and it's very relative, I stress the best in town are Garage Bar and Cole's. Those, you know, okay, when you cook pizza at that temperature, 800 to 1000 degrees, you get a wholly different product than what you get out of a standard oven that you might get at Wick's or Pella's Aries, both of which are great products but not exactly the favorite kind for me, because I like that super thin crust. I like the charred crust. I like very minimal ingredients. I don't like the piled high casserole on a crust type pizza. It's just not my style.
Well, there you go. I was just at the Garage Bar the other night. You're exactly right. It's a totally different feel, I guess, a feel and taste.
That's probably the most authentic in town.
Yeah.
I think, based on my research anyway.
Okay. Okay. So now you, I wanted to give you a chance to talk about, you are researching a book that is going to be of interest to a lot of folks around here, right?
I hope so. The name of the book is Hog, Salt, Smoke, a Southern Story of Country Ham. And I was approached by a publisher in Charleston, South Carolina, who correctly recognized that country ham is a trend that's really ready to take off. And what's interesting about it is the really well-done hams in Kentucky get more respect around the world and in the higher end restaurants in the larger cities than they do in Kentucky. And I've had the privilege of interviewing about a dozen ham makers so far who are among the nicest people I've ever met, but really underappreciate the artisan craft of their product. So part of that is to tell that story, and part of it is to toot Kentucky and Tennessee's horn. That'll be the other state that I'll visit in my research.
Okay. How's it coming? When's it going to be done?
It's due way too soon. I'll tell you that. It's due February 1. I'm actually pushing myself to get it done by early January. But the book will publish around Derby time, a couple of weeks before, and then the road show begins, where we go and promote it and talk about it and hopefully get a lot of you listeners to buy it.
Well, there you go. Well, I hope so. I look forward to it. I'm sure it'll be in bookstores around here. Before I let you go, let's talk about tequila, because, you know, you become an expert in, you know, and I don't know how you do that because we talked before. I don't have the distinguishing palate that you have.
I'm on the fence about that. I think a lot of it's learned. I think a lot of it is desired. But there are other people that say, I just don't taste the flavors that you're tasting. So I guess maybe I'm gifted in that area. That's a rare gift for me. Trust me.
So how should we drink tequila
don't be afraid to spend the money on it because it truly is a dollar or a return on investment kind of proposal. If you spend more, you will get a better tequila. But pouring about an ounce, letting it sit in a glass maybe 5 or 10 minutes, swishing it like you would wine, that really allows the aromas to come out. You put your nose near the lip of the glass and inhale slowly and try to pick out some of those flavors. You know, your nose tells the story far more than your mouth does. And then sip it very slowly. This is not for shooting. The lemon salt, you know, shot.
I was
going to
say, I thought
crazy.
You drank tequila by pouring some salt on your hand and licking it, dousing the tequila, and then sucking on a lemon. Isn't that the way you're supposed
to
drink
tequila? That's not the way you're supposed to do it. And that typically is garbage tequila that we were drinking when we did that kind of
the Montezumas lunacy. Of the world, I think.
Exactly. And Montezuma got his revenge probably too. So. Yeah,
that was fun. I think most people have a horrible story about their college years of the night they drank tequila
or bourbon or just that. Fill in the blank. I mean, it just whenever it's abused, you're going to get abused.
That's right. Well, Steve, I want to remind our listeners we can read about new restaurant. Tell me a little bit before we go about what's going on right now in Louisville in terms of new restaurants.
There's not a lot that's not true. With Atlantic Number 5 opened up down on Main Street. Those are the guys that are behind Rye. El Camino just opened up on Barsan Road. That is the same group that opened the brilliant Silver Dollar restaurant. Fantastic place. I don't know that there's a ton new on the board. It's interesting to see still people getting into the marketplace when there really isn't. The demand is not increasing at that level.
It's a really tough business.
It's an exceptionally tough business. Where guys, you know, Doug Gossman, the co-founder of Bristol Bar and Grill, told me a few years ago. He said, when we opened in 1979, we were making 25 cents on the dollar all day long. He said, we're lucky to get a nickel now.
Wow.
They're telling the truth.
Yeah.
And people are just champing at the bit to get into this business for a nickel on the dollar.
I guess it's like all these other businesses we were talking about. It sounds better than it is in reality. You know, the idea of owning a restaurant and being, you know, running the place, I guess it sounds like it'd be fun.
Well, it feels like it'd be a place, you know, it's like having everybody over your house every night of the week. Well, even that would get old if you had the money to do it.
That's
so
right.
It's a tough business.
All right, Steve. Well, thank you for coming on the Rusty Satellite Show. I want to remind everybody, insiderlouisville.com. You can read Steve's stuff occasionally when I get around to it. You can read my stuff there. But Steve is a regular contributor, and, you know, he just knows everything there is to know. I suggest you call him on his personal phone if you want a restaurant recommendation. Right, Steve?
Or my Facebook page. That's good, too.
That's right. Okay, Steve Coombs on the Rusty Satellite Show. We'll be right back.
It was great to be here.
The Louisville real estate market is hot, and nobody knows it better than George Barrett at Simonton Realtors. From neighborhood to neighborhood, work with George to buy, sell, or invest in Louisville real estate. He's often considered a premier agent in town and is waiting and ready to solve your real estate problems. Find George Barrett, Simonton Realtors, online at KentuckyTeamRealtors.com.
I'd like to thank Steve Coombs for coming by. It really wasn't that bad of a thing for him. Steve grew up a few miles from here and went to St. X, and so his trip in from Goshen, always kid with him that he has to gas up. It's so far out there, but Steve lives out there and enjoys it. And anyway, I want to talk to a few things that went on this week. It's been a very active week in the city. One of the things that happened on Tuesday night, I wanted to talk about real briefly. The Society of Professional Journalists in town, the local chapter, hosted a panel about media, about the moves that have been made by two media operations in the city. I've chronicled on Insider Louisville what's going on, but basically the WDRB-TV has sort of raided the newsroom at the Courier-Journal and hired reporters away. It started in 2012 with Rick Bozich and Eric Crawford, who's been a Rusty Satellite guest, and then continued this year. John David Dyke, the editorial writer, is writing for WDRB now, and so are three reporters. And And meanwhile, over the other part of the panel was at Louisville Public Media, where the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting was launched. You might remember Brendan McCarthy, the head of that, was on this show and talking about what they're doing, and they have hired more people. And it was just interesting to see a bunch of folks in journalism. Now, there are only about 24 people there at the studios at Louisville Public Media. But those 24 people, and a lot of those people worked at either WDRB or Louisville Public Media. And the basics of the discussion were, you know, the future of journalism and whether, you know, the strategies involved at these two operations, which the strategy seems to be hiring more journalists, which is something I'm very much in favor of. Is that going to work in the future in this world that we have, in this very confusing, fragmented media world? And where do people get their news, and how do they get it? And there's a lot of talk about social media, that even news organizations are getting their traffic from social media. And you wonder who's watching TV, who's listening to the radio, who's reading the newspaper, or are people just getting their news from their Facebook feed, the news feed, or are they just going on Twitter and they're only getting the news that they're interested in? It's a long time from the days when there was a news, you know, you read the newspaper every day, or you watch the 6 o'clock news. It's a much, much different world out there. And you know, everybody in that room sort of realizes there was a little bit of a very polite bashing of the local newspaper for, you know, basically it's abdication of all the things that we're used to a newspaper doing. It really doesn't do that anymore. So, the beats that they don't cover and all that. But, you know, the good news is the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, we've got a bunch of reporters on staff, and they're not, you know, overworked and underpaid like you would expect. These people, you know, I'm really waiting for these new hires to actually produce some journalism. There's been bits and pieces, but, you know, as of yet, you know, really haven't seen a lot. I don't know what they're doing all day over there, but you know, they're working. So we'll see. The same thing at WDRB. You know, I think, you know, Eric Crawford and Rick Bozich, too, are some of the hardest working journalists in this town. I think they're still getting used to things over there with the other reporters. And I'm anxious to see if their website at WDRB is going to become, by throwing manpower at it and resources at it, is it going to become the source that WDRB hopes it will be? Bill Lamb was there at the event, and he talked about, he believes, you know, he's got a lot more independence than the other stations in town. You might wonder, okay, a year ago they hired two sports writers, and, you know, very shook this town up in terms of media, how they're going to do that. But, you know, they say they're successful. So I asked Billy, you know, or I asked Barry Fulmer, the news director who was on the panel, you know, why aren't other stations hiring journalists to write news for the web? You know, it just hadn't happened yet. Lamb, in response to a question that I posed at the event, said that he said that all the salaries of the new reporters were paid for by advertisers before they walked in the door. Now, we don't know. You know, I don't have access to his books. And, you know, we just got to basically trust him on that. The proof is in the pudding, though. Over WDRB, they're building all kinds of new space. They got a construction project going on. They're producing a lot of content over there. And I think they've made a dramatic move up in terms of their standing versus the other stations. So we'll see how that plays out. And there's really another media-related story in the news this week, and I just wanted to talk about it a little bit because I think everybody can really understand and or have an opinion on what's going on with Rand Paul. Now, you know, whether Rand Paul, our Kentucky State Senator, is going to be president or not is not going to hinge on this issue, but this is what he's in the news for, and that is plagiarism. Paul, this is one of those stories that just starts small and grows and grows. It started with the fact that some people discovered, some media operation discovered that parts of a speech that Rand Paul gave were plagiarized from Wikipedia. Now, you might say no big deal. You might say it is a big deal, depending on who you are and how you feel about Rand Paul. It's funny that I did see a clip on the Jon Stewart, on the Daily Show with Jon Stewart, where they sort of had a lot of fun with this story. But the story, as of this week, is growing because further research indicates that, that there are other things. That, you know, he had a column in the Washington Times. Rand Paul wrote a column for the Washington Times, and some people went back and looked at some of his columns and found out that he plagiarized passages in those columns. In the newspaper discontinued the column as a result of this. So Paul has responded, you know, at first by saying that, you know, it was people out to get him, he has enemies and all that. And then finally, I think this week has sort of admitted that he was responsible, even though I think Paul's problem may be that maybe with his staff, he's got staffers apparently that help him with his, you know, every senator has staffers that help him with their speeches and the things that they do, the things that they write. And I don't know. I think Paul just must have some idiots working for him because, you know, they've embarrassed their boss in a big way. And Paul's become a really lightning rod in Washington. He's a national political figure who is from Kentucky. And, you know, we're a big deal in the Senate, you know, with Mitch McConnell and Paul. And it's interesting if you're interested in plagiarism, like, you know, I taught some school at Brown Mackey College a couple of years ago, and boy, in schools there is a big emphasis on plagiarism because it's so easy in our cut and paste world that we have. You know, it's very tempting for school assignments for students to plagiarize from Wikipedia or whatever. It's like they think it's too much trouble to rewrite or put some original thought when all you can do is go to the internet and cut and paste something and patch it together in a newspaper. So there's all this software that's been developed, I guess, that combats that. And in the education industry, plagiarism is a big deal. And so in the national political discussion, I think, Rand Paul's, problems here are gonna really hurt him in the long run, just like, he did when he hired the Southern Avenger, a guy with some racist past. Paul, you know, you gotta admire some of the things he does take some stands that surprise you. I really supported his position on convicted felons and giving their rights back, which was really surprising. It sort of goes against the Republican beat, so to speak. But Paul is in the news for a bad reason mostly this week. So you gotta catch up to that stuff on Paul and plagiarism. It's a very interesting story. All right, so let's get on with my next guest. If you may not realize it, but you have seen the photographs of John Nation if you've lived in this community in any amount of time at all. John has spent 35 years at one job at Louisville Magazine. Pretty amazing tenure that ended a year or two ago. John's managed to stay busy with a bunch of interesting projects, and the one we talk about today is a new book called 100 Fascinating Women of Louisville. And John got to go out and do 100 portraits, which is, you know, it's really this book. I just glanced at it while he was here, and it's a great book. I think it's I'll put a link to it on rustysatelliteshow.com. But let's just get on into it. John's a you know, he's a great photographer. He's a great guy. I seem to see him everywhere I go in town. But I think if you pick up this book, it's really a worthwhile thing. And hopefully, I'll get some of the women from that book as guests on the Rusty Satellite shows in the future. But anyway, I got to sit down and have a nice talk with John Nation. Here it is.
Learn about the movers and shakers in the Louisville business scene with Startup Conversations with Louisville Entrepreneurs. A new episode every Tuesday at Louisville.am.
And we're back here on the Rusty Satellite Show. Welcome in. I have another great guest here in the studios in the Highlands at Louisville.am, and it is John Nation. You know John as a great photographer. He's done some of the most iconic, memorable images this town's ever seen. And John, welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show.
Thank you, Rick. It's good to be here.
Glad to have you in. And the reason I called you to be on the show this week, I know that you were involved in a project that I think a lot of people in Louisville are going to be interested in. And I may get the title wrong, but it's a new book called 100 Fascinating Women in Louisville. Is that right?
100 Fascinating Louisville Women.
Okay, yes. Close enough, right? So this just came out, what, last week? Or
It's been out 2 or 3 weeks now.
Okay. And you, if I'm correct, took every one of these 100 portraits of these women, right?
Yes, I did.
All right. Well, tell me what was memorable about, any cool places or things you didn't know, things that surprised you?
Well, let's, at the beginning, we'll start with, Nancy Miller came to me and said she was going to do this book. She wanted to do a story, and it was originally proposed to me as everything from priests to prostitutes. And, it shifted a little bit. No recognized. But no, it was a great group of people that she got together, and she did that because she wanted it not to be the regular list of people that one might expect, but just women that were fascinating for whatever walks of life they had. And so she took a wide variety from a young woman, probably the youngest is, maybe 21, and up to late 80s.
Okay.
And she took all ages, all ethnic groups, races.
A lot of different professions. I know some...
whole variety of professions.
A handful of media people were in there, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm always interested in. Renee Murphy, right?
Yes, she was in there.
He's got one here handy, so maybe we can, like, cheat
look at these
and
pictures.
Look it up.
Look at these pictures.
I'd love to see it. Now, how did you go about, I mean, that had to take a long time, because I know each and every one of them probably required setting up a full day of shooting, or how'd you do it? You do a bunch of them at once?
Huge variety on that. The book, Nancy conceived of the idea over 3 years ago when she first came to me. And I said, you know, you should have a woman photograph in this book, but she wanted me to do it, and I'm glad she did, because it was a lot of fun, and to meet the people and to photograph them was terrific. But we started out, sometimes she and I would go together on assignments. Other times she would leave it to myself. And I work independently anyway, so it was good. One of the quickest assignments, the most difficult, was one we went to together. And being a highly professional woman, she didn't have much time, so we were in and out of there in probably, for my part, 5 minutes.
Wow. Now, who was that?
I'd rather not say. Oh.
Got secrets, okay. Yeah.
Because it was just a short amount of time.
Yeah. I guess the subjects got to choose the setting, or how did that work?
We worked together on it.
Okay. Is there any really unusual? I mean, tell me some of the places you went.
Well, my favorite was with Christy Brown. And when mentioned it to Christy Brown, she said, well, she opposes mountaintop removal, and we need to do a portrait out in the eastern part of Kentucky. And I said, well, that'd be great. If we can get out there, let's do it. So we got in a plane and went out and spent the day out there, and she climbed to the top of this mountain with me. I mean, I told her I wanted to do it either sunrise or sunset, so we chose sunset, of course, because it gives more time to get there. And we landed on this little mountain strip, I guess near Hazard, somewhere in there, and just four of us in the plane, and drove, you know, met a person there who picked us up, and we drove back through the mountains to this place and climbed up there, and she was a trooper.
Yeah, and all for one photograph.
All for one photograph.
That's really something. So was that the furthest distance you traveled for any one of these?
That was the farthest I traveled, and while we were there, she picked up a huge lump of coal and then some water that was runoff water that the people there have to drink, because that's what they have. And she is very adamant and angry in her image, because, you know, she wanted to show that she's opposing this.
Right.
And it was the most memorable by far.
Okay. Well, very, very cool. Well, any that were more like fun or interesting, unusual? We got a book in the studio here. It's a great looking thing. It's a big, thick book. And,
it's always fun. And, Tori Merton McClure was, of course, a lot of fun, because we went out on the water and she was rowing in her pearls. And, we got done with the shoot and she put me up on one of those standing paddle boards, and we went through with that. And then Terry, Kendall, who is, an aerialist, was there.
An aerialist.
And she's the only one on the cover of the book whose photograph is upside down.
Oh. And okay. I don't know what an aerialist is.
An aerialist, she performs, on, you know, trapeze and
oh really okay
work like yeah. that. So she's actually, the reason I say she's upside down in the book is because the pictures on the front of the book are from the inside of the book, and she's hanging upside down inside the book.
Oh.
So when we had her upside down on the cover, it looked really out of place, so we had to switch her right side up.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Well, it's a great looking book, and you know, just moving on from that, John, though, you've been involved in so many projects over the years as a photographer. How did you, give me an idea of how this all got started for you, because you're...
The photography?
Yeah.
I came here, my degree is from University of Louisville in drawing and painting, which okay. I always liked the visual arts. At that time, Vietnam was going on, so I was on a deferment from Vietnam. When I went back into the Navy, which I had signed up for, I had my choice of things to choose from, and I elected photography. And it seemed like a good way to get out, you know, be out of the office, be where the action is, and see what was going on. So that's what I did. And finished up my time with the Navy, came back here, and started walking the streets trying to find a job. People liked my portfolio, but there weren't really jobs. It was just freelance. And then I hooked up with Louisville Magazine.
And most people around here, I think, know you from your work at Louisville Magazine. You were there how long?
35 years.
35 years. Wow.
Yep, 35 years, 5 to 7 days a week.
Wow. That's a lot of photographs. Yeah. I don't know how many that is, but you probably take it a lot. What's in your career, in 35 years at Louisville Magazine, anything stick out as what's like a really memorable shot that got a lot of play or a lot of attention for you?
From there, one of my favorites was probably Ed Hart on top of Chang, which was used on the cover of the magazine when he first brought back Kentucky Kingdom. And we went out, and I asked him again to meet me at sunrise. I like the sunrise light. And we went out at sunrise, and he's in an Italian suit, and he's slick shoes and everything.
That was back in his ponytail days, right?
I was in his ponytail days, and I was shooting film, Velvia, and... he said, well, let's shoot by this sign. Let's shoot by this sign. And I'm going, let's do something interesting. Let's climb up on this loop. So he looked at me and he started cussing me. And then he goes, all right, let's do it. And he starts climbing up there in his slick shoes and took a pose on the big old yellow loop. The sky was gorgeous. He had brought different ties, and his tie matched the loop and the clouds in the sky and all this. And it was...
Well, I remember that period. I was at Business First at the time, and I did a story, probably without as great a photo, but I remember that. That's really something. You've really seen a lot of changes in Louisville, but certainly a lot of changes in photography over the years.
Oh, sure.
How's that affected professional photography?
Well, it's interesting. It used to be when you're shooting film, especially if you were shooting a slide for E6 processing, you had to be right on the button for your exposure. You couldn't have any mistakes. Now you can get away with anything because it's digital. You know, you can take that out, you can fix this, you can merge that, you do whatever.
Yeah, there wasn't a Photoshop back in those days.
Everyone's a photographer these days. So.
I took a photography course in college, and I remember I had to learn about f-stops and exposure and go in the dark room, do all that stuff. There's a lot to it. You know, it's certainly simplified a lot. It's a little bit like writing, I guess, John. Back then, you know, only like professionals did real photography, and writing, you know, it used to be only people who worked for newspapers, magazines, wrote for publication. But, you know, now everybody's doing
it, right?
Right. How do you, you know, it seems like that would be a challenge, because if everybody can do it, why do we need a professional?
Well, it is a challenge, and everybody, it does open the doors, and it actually paves the way for it to be better for people that are out there. But I think if you have the background and the basics, then you apply those fundamentals and you come up with what's really a good image. And that's, you know, composition, lighting, and subject matter. You got to get those things in. And a lot of people are unaware of that. And unfortunately, you see that in magazines and
I guess
today.
You probably, like me, you see photos all over the place and say, boy, that
you shake your head. I go, what?
I can't believe that, you know, somebody wrote that and put it in a magazine. I tell you, it happens. But anyway, we're about out of time here, John, but I really appreciate you coming by. It's a great new project, the book. But tell our listeners how they get the book.
Well, you can get it at Carmichael's, and there are other locations. But go to 100 Fascinating Louisville and Google it, and you'll find out where it can be bought.
Okay.
And there's a website there that's a pretty nice website.
Really great piece of work there, John.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming by, and look forward to, I know you're going to be involved in a lot of projects, and you know, look forward to, always looking forward to seeing your work out there in the world and chronicling Louisville. So let me ask, any other book projects on the horizon?
I just worked last year. I had shot with Ted Wathen and Bob Hauer, and we did a book for the Parklands. And Michael Gage has some images in there as well. And it celebrates the new Parklands that's been opened up.
Cool.
That Dan and David Jones have spearheaded.
Right.
Upon seeing that, a private client asked me to come photograph his property, and Julius Friedman and I, after shooting there for a year, he put together a book that's going to just be gorgeous.
Wow. Well, we can't wait for that to come out next year, I guess.
It should be coming out fairly soon.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, that's John Nation, world-class photographer, one of the great treasures of Louisville, Kentucky, my hometown. So thanks, John, again, for being on the Rusty Satellite Show.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Bye.
It's a big week, big weekend in Louisville. Want to remind anybody, you know, one of the things I get to do, if you remember a few weeks back, I had my alter ego, I guess, Rick Redman of Louisville Slugger on. This weekend, Friday night, Cal Ripken's in town to receive an award at the Slugger Museum. Going to go down there Friday night and check that out. The Cardinals, football Cardinals, are also playing Friday night on the road at Connecticut. And Connecticut's 0-7, so it should be a big, easy win for U of L. And I'm not sure exactly what day the first real basketball game is, but that's coming up very soon. I want to thank my sponsor, Pantsport Health Plans, for jumping on board. It's going to be a great ride. They're going to be with me for a long time. We're going to hear some stuff about healthcare in the near future as we move forward. But it's the Rusty Satellite Show. You can catch information about the show at rustysatelliteshow.com, louisvilleky.com. I'm on Twitter at Ricky Redding, and I look forward to having you tune in again next week. RustySatelliteShow.com on Louisville.am. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to the Rusty Satellite Podcast with your host, Rick Redding. Next week, Rick will be right back here on Louisville.am with another stellar lineup of great guests. You can let Rick know what you think by sending an email to rick@louisvilleky.com. He's on Twitter, too, at Ricky Redding. For more information about the show, including photos of Rusty Satellite Show guests, go to louisvilleky.com, the pulse of the city.
Time.